I'm Device from Astralis, and welcome to Foreign's YouTube channel. It's a choke-free zone.
Right, this is going to be another episode of Reflections, and my guest for this one is going to be Sean Gares, obviously a very well-known Counter-Strike player for many years, and now works in Valorant and did some coaching there and was on the broadcast side. Right, here's the funny thing, Sean. When I've done a lot of these Reflections interviews, what's funny is what's changed about them over the years is, even though I did this style of interview a long, long time ago, even in 1.6, obviously back then, someone who had like a long career was like, you know, 6 years. Now we're doing interviews where, like, I mean, I think we might have been at the same lands for like 10 years, you know, like, so already we're getting to the point where it's so long that when I did them with like people like Taz, for example, the joke is, if you ever watch them, we almost never reference a match that ever happened because there's too many. Like, essentially, it's more like you just pick interesting topics, and it's not really like the old ones where, you know, you go like, and then you went to ESWC and then you did the major. But I actually did look, and in your case, even though you're considered like a legendary North American player, I actually think there's quite a few old school topics where people will be interested in all some of the history, because I feel like no one really knows you before the Complexity / Cloud9 period. So I actually did want to ask a little bit, like, when we did that Valorant podcast, I teased it like you were nobody, but obviously you were around the 1.6 scene in the invite. People didn't know you had ESEAs back then. You'd have the online league, then you'd have the teams that go to LAN. As a random aside, even back then, because of the people who ran ESN, they were all nutters. So if you qualify for the LAN and you don't attend the LAN, they ban you from next season, because you have to understand, guys, it was just a different world back then. So when I went back, though, you actually were playing earlier than I remember, though, dude. Like, I remember at the end, obviously, especially when you teamed with Semphis and those guys. But I actually didn't know it. Dude, the craziest one was when I looked it up, you were at, like, a WSVG Louisville back in, like, 2007. Was that really, like, your first proper, like, esports line? People don't know, WSVG was, like, the rival to the CPL run by a guy who actually was involved in it. And it was trying to be, like, a big tournament circuit. So was this actually your first, like, esports LAN?
Ooh, that's a good question.
It was quite a while ago then. You must be pretty young then, right? How old were you then, in 2007, mate?
2007. Oh my God. I don't even know how old I would have been. I would have probably not been 18 yet.
Okay.
Yeah, that was like, you know, fresh out of high school, you know, like, but I do remember that LAN vividly. Like, I was on like a LAN team in Arizona, and we were grinding at that point. I think we had just qualified for like CVOP ESEA invite. It was like a huge feat for like a local team to do that, right? We were sponsored by a local LAN center. We would practice on LAN, and that WSVG Louisville, we drove there in two cars, and my parents were not very cool with me gaming back then. It was not socially acceptable. And I remember after getting bounced out, first of all, I think we played like Mouse Sports or something like that, if yes. I remember correctly. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. And they used like, that was when there was like all these complications with like the crouch hopping.
Yes,
and
this
stuff.
Was when it was first becoming like controversial as to whether it should be allowed, right?
Yeah. And those motherfuckers had that shit bound to like mouse wheel.
Right.
And I was like the goat of using like crouch hopping back then. Like, I was just like a zoomer, like running around like fucking,
okay,
you know, just crouch hopping everywhere. No one could understand where I was. But we were told you couldn't bind it to mouse wheel back then.
Ah, right. If people don't know, it's a lot harder to do it manually with like the control key, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. You just like double tap control. Yeah. And these guys were just like running around the map using mouse wheel. And we didn't think that that should have been legal. And turns out it ended up being legal. But so we were a little butthurt about that, and we drove back, and I'll never forget, because we were, like, driving through Missouri, and I was, like, doing the math in my head, like, if I go, like, 10 miles an hour over, like, for those of you that don't know, like, Louisville to Arizona is so goddamn fucking far. That's, like, a multiple-day trip.
Oh,
like,
right, okay, fucking hell.
So it's super fucking far. It's, like, a 20-hour drive, I think, I'm pretty sure like that. And I was doing the math on, like, how to shave time. Turns out I was going like 130 miles an hour on like a 65.
Was it like wide open though, like wide open highways and stuff? You could just see there's no one there, right?
Yeah. And then I guess someone like called in that we were going super fast.
Okay.
And basically a cop ended up pulling us over.
Okay.
There was no like speedometer or anything. He had to catch us on like pace. So our tickets were, yeah, like 130 in like a 70 or something, okay. 65. It was horrible. It was horrible. But that's my memory of that trip.
By the way, just as an aside, I wonder actually one question I would have about that though is it when you first go to a proper esports like that, where like you say, it's not like you're just at a land with like other like invite level players. You like you say, you're there with people like Mousesports, like legendary German players, and then like Lopez's team from Finland's there, and like SK Gaming from Sweden. When you see like the real pros, did it actually give you that vibe of like, I want to be part of this? Did you actually have that sort of like vibe when you went to that? Or like next time, you know, I'll get him and I'll be good or whatever?
Yeah, I remember, like, I had unlimited confidence as a player back then, right? Like, it was always like, I'm going to win this tournament. And when I lost, it was like, oh, okay, like, I'm going to win the next one. And it was obviously devastating to lose. When you have that mentality that you're going to win a tournament and you don't win the tournament, it's devastating. But then I was very good at just bouncing out of that, like immediately being like, this is what went wrong. Like, this is what we need to fix. And, you know, maybe this isn't the team we need. Maybe we need to replace this player. And then I was also pretty cutthroat back then as far as my mentality of like, all right, this team's not going to work out. I'm going
to
leave.
Oh, you'll
like,
just bounce to the next one if you need to, right?
Yeah. Like, and I think that that's how I kind of progressed through the 1.6 time frame is I had that kind of mentality where all I wanted to do was to be on the best team. All right. I wanted to do was grind. And if I saw that my players on my team didn't have that in them, I wasn't as good as communicating back then. I would just, you know, like find players that fit my mentality.
By the way, that I'll expand on that, because if people don't know, back then, that's no mean feat. Like, that's nothing small in the NA scene. The NA scene was notorious for people being lazy and slackers and, like, legitimately, like, the stereotype of just smoking weed and playing pogs and not thinking about the game and not studying for your next opponent. And, in fact, you know how it was. There would be people who would have invite teams, like actual good pros, who would only play the invite matches, and you didn't even know if they were ever scrimming or did they even put in any hours. Like, because basically what you're talking about, by the way, I would actually say this is what people like Eco, who he later on hooked up with, had a similar thing. It's like they had a mentality of like, I actually want to be like a pro gamer. I want to be good at this. I want to win. I don't just want to be like, you know, the status of being invite and then doing that thing where you're like, oh, you practice like losers. You're all nerds and tryhards. Like, but there was a lot of that infected the NA scene back in 1.6, wasn't there? Like, and the fact that there wasn't any money was like everyone's excuse for not playing, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And then in addition to all of that, you have to remember that the social media apps didn't exist.
Oh, of course.
Then, right?
Yes. Like,
so that you didn't really understand what other people were doing unless you had direct insight to their team from players, and they probably wouldn't even want to share that stuff with you. So all you knew was that you wanted to do this, you wanted to achieve this goal, and you wanted people to have the same buy-in as you. And that's what made things like really hard back then, is you're kind of literally reinventing the wheel on every single team, because you didn't have a YouTube video or a TikTok or a fucking tweet to go off of back then. It was just, what is the, you had to craft the best way to become the best. And you couldn't really reference any other team unless it was in like a Gottfrag interview, or remember Midway's playbooks? They were fucking pictures. They were literally pictures. Exactly. So like, that's what we had to work with back then.
Yes. By the way, one of the teams after this that you were involved with, where people will know some of the players, is when you were in the Damage Inc. team. Now, as far as I know, this was a team where, like, it's famous players, but it wasn't this more of, like, sort of like a mixed team? Like, you know how famously, like, Sweden, everyone in the world was in, like, Big Rip and H2K, like, you know, the ones you go to if you're not in SK or you're trying to get into SK. Wasn't it like this, the Damage Inc. team? I remember it was around for a bunch of the ESEAs. And if I look at these players, basically, these are just players who aren't any more in EG and Complexity. You're sort of like a mix of invite players, right? How did you get into this squad? Because this is when you actually started to get the results, right?
Yeah. So like I said, I was pretty cutthroat in my mentality about just like leaving teams I didn't feel like could progress through. And after a couple like heartbreaking losses, like within the Arizona teams I was on back then, I decided to join up with, it was like Steno, Pauly, Quas, Jay Stone. Like, it's me, some like West Coast kid, and a bunch of New Yorkers. Like,
right. Oh, yeah, they're all East Coast players. Yeah, you're right.
Dude, they had such a different way of communicating. It was so funny to me, and everything was so unique. I was learning so much from Steno. Like, to this day, I give Steno like all the credit in the world for changing my mentality on how I think about the game. Like, I was in-game leading at that WSVG tournament, but I didn't understand mid-rounding and rotations, and so it was a lot of set plays and kind of using our skill and like innovation to beat people. But once I started playing with Steno, it was like all about mid round. It was all about abusing the other team's rotations, and it really opened my eyes to everything. And from like the moment I joined a prax server with him, I knew I like probably wasn't going to leave a team with him a long time.
Okay.
And that's what that phase reminded me of. That damaging team, the, like you said, like there was like no money in gaming back then. I think like,
yes,
I don't even think we got a salary. Maybe it was like,
I doubt
it was very, very little. It's not enough to live off of if it was. And I don't mean that in the sense of like a couple grand a month. I mean, like it wasn't even a couple hundred dollars a month.
Yes.
If we got paid. And I'm pretty sure it was just like a jersey sponsorship. Like I was also sponsored by like EMG. I don't even remember them. Like, and eventually we ended up going to like Loaded. How insane is that? I was on Loaded as a team, and now Loaded is this agency that, you know, has repped like Ninja, Dr. Disrespect, Shroud, Tim the Tap Man, like fucking every big streamer you can think of. But back then, Loaded was my first like real team I was on, where Brandon Freytag was the owner.
Right, let me ask you a follow-up, though, because I actually did plan on asking you about Steno, because here's the funny thing, Sean. I would actually describe Steno as one of those people where, depending on who you talk to, he was either famous or infamous. Because here's what's funny, but I think I get this, though, dude. After knowing some of the players and seeing everyone's different personality, what we just set up there about the ambience of the NA scene, how it was a lot of people who were quite lazy and they sort of just relied on skill, and quite frankly, most people just pogged it. Like, you remember what it was like that? There were people who thought they were in real teams, dude, who their whole thing was like, right, at the start of the round, get a pick. I remember telling them, you know, that's not tactics, right? That's actually playing a pog, bro. Like, what are you? But they thought that was like pro CS because they were just about shooting people with a crosshair. So if people don't know, when Steno came along, if people don't know, this is a guy who, like, I think ethnically was like Ukrainian. He had one of the strange names. And so he already wasn't like the typical NA guy. And I would just say this, the reason he was a bit infamous is because some people thought he was like pretentious, or he's like deluded that he thinks he's going to be like the best. But to me, he was just a try hard, and I could actually appreciate that, though, Sean, because like you're saying, he was a guy who was trying to like be the mastermind, like IGL, and have like, and essentially his whole shit really was like, I've heard he was like mega strict. It was like you have to follow his call like exactly, and if he tells you like to go, you go. And some of the players who played with him, you are almost like he's just microing you. Like, give me some thoughts, because like I say, on some level, because he was a try hard, some people tried to like, they kind of memed on him back then and made him sound like he was an idiot. But to me, I could actually appreciate that he was trying to be the real IGL, though, right?
Yeah, he was trying. Like you said, he's Ukrainian, and at the time, Navi was insane.
Oh, sure.
Like Markov, Starix, all those guys. And he tried to model the team a lot after Navi, right? And I thought we had a pretty good mix of people, because like I said, going into playing with him, I was very strat heavy, like innovating, finding cool smoke, stuff like that. And he was so focused on like defaulting and mid-rounding and understanding where the other team would be moving around the map. And we would go in prac servers and he would just be so dry. Like, it would be so boring for some of the other players on the team. And it would seem like he was kind of saying the same thing over and over, because it was like, you know, once we do this, this player is going to move there. And then the next day we would be on a server, it'd be like, once if we do like this a little bit different, this player is going to move like over here. And so some players on the team would think this is boring as fuck. Like, this is so boring. But I was like soaking it all up and kind of laughing. I remember like J-Stone at the time would be like, he would come alive like while Steno was going over stuff in a server. Because this was when you would all join a server, the in-game leader would stay alive, you would all kill yourself in console and just spectate. And J-Stone would like come alive and noclip around the map and like change his name to like J-Stone's Gun Shop and just like throw guns around. And Steno somehow had it in him to just like ignore it. Just totally like blank face ignore it. And I was like, this is fucking unreal. This is actually unreal that this is going on within our team. But it was such a fun environment. I think what I respected most out of him is what you said, that like grind mentality, right? Like, he was very quick to, if someone like stepped out of line in actual scrims or something, he'd be like, yo, that's whack. Like, he would make you feel pretty fucking shitty about it. Like, he would guilt you into being like, yo, like, come on, you're ruining the practice for like all of us. So I said that thing with J-Stone, but like literally after practice, he like reprimanded J-Stone and it like never happened again. Yeah, because he had some fucking, we had some fucking clowns on that team, man. Like Kwas, J Stone. I think we even played like Lim for a little bit. I thought Steno did a really good job of like managing all those personalities. Okay. And yeah, I think he did have that grind mentality, and people didn't like the fact that he was very cocky. Like he was very,
He definitely thought he was the shit, didn't he?
Yeah.
By the way, along these lines, though, one thing obviously that's inferred that we haven't explicitly said is Sean Gares in this team isn't the in-game leader. Like, he's just a player. So here's the thing. People might know you from CSGO. Who was Sean Gares at 1.6? Like, what sort of roles did he play? What sort of player were you? Were you actually a skilled player in 1.6, do you think?
Yeah. I think I was really skilled in the early stages of 1.6. Like, I'm talking probably before I started in-game leading. I skipped Cal Open, went straight to, like, Cal Intermediate, and then quickly went to Cal Main. Actually, I think I might have went straight to Cal Main now that I'm thinking about it. And then I went down to Intermediate, and I was ringing for Weekend Warriors on someone's account in Cal Invite. I don't know if I can. I guess at this point, it doesn't really fucking matter.
It's like, now, isn't it? I know. I can't do anything about it.
Some guy named, actually, his literal alias was Cockzilla.
Oh, yeah, well, that was a player from Wicked Warriors. Yeah, true, okay.
Yeah, I played under his account for, like, a match, and, yeah, that was pretty interesting. And I was an AWPer back then. I was super aggressive. So I was, like, a loner in high school where, like, I would just literally play games before school. I would come home, play games. All I did was play Counter-Strike. That's literally all I did. And I remember I would put music on like, because I was in like an office room where I had like my gaming PC and a second PC that like wasn't for me. It was for like my parents. And I'd play music from that second PC. And I would just literally be pushing to like the music. Like I would
you were vibing with like the beat on the drop.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I would literally like pop off with the music.
And by the way, does it go without saying, Sean, that if I'm thinking of the era, the music was all the classic frag movie stuff, like, you know, Linkin Park, and was it all the classics? Because by the way, what people, the reason they pick that music for the movies, guys, is it does hype you up. Like, who doesn't like it? You're crawling. Everyone loves that shit. It was pop music.
Dude, to this day, actually, I still listen to some of that, like, frag movie music.
For the nostalgia of it, to hook back in.
Yeah, I think Sponge made a playlist.
Actually, oh, right. It's old school shit like that.
Yeah.
Right.
I helped him add, like, a bunch of stuff, because I was a huge frag movie junkie. Like, it would always be, like, playing. I'd always watch it to hype me up. Yeah. I miss those days.
When did you become an in-game leader then? Did you do it a bit in 1.6? Was it in CSGO? When was it?
I think it might have been like on one of the Arizona local teams or something.
Okay.
I think it was like around that time. Yeah.
But you got to the top as just a player though?
No, I actually got to the top as an in-game leader.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it already the Steno team you didn't in-game lead in then?
I'm trying to think. Did I in-game lead in like that Delusional team I was on? There was actually a team called Delusional that I was on. And I was on this like really good team, and we ended up like winning Cal Main and Cal Premier. And I don't remember if I was even in game league. I don't think I was back then. And it was so confusing because back then my parents wouldn't let me travel for CS. They fucking hated the game. And they ended up having to get like a sixth player. So every time there was a tournament in California, the player would have to sub in for me because my parents wouldn't let me go to California to play CS, which was like heartbreaking for me. Like I'd put all this time in, I would practice super hard, and my teammates would then get to play in like these tournaments and I would just have to watch from home. And eventually,
by the way, does that mean when you were a good boy, you never thought about like just sneaking out and telling you going, you know, to stay at a friend's house for 2 days? You never thought about being naughty?
Oh, I was a pretty bad kid, but
it's not like, in this regard. You did not go to the land, fair enough.
Yeah, eventually, like I ended up just kind of going, but this was like, you know, when I was like 15 or 16.
Right.
My first LAN, actually, I've said this story on stream recently. I'll never forget this. It was a LAN center called Elite PC in Tempe, Arizona, and you know how local LANs are, well, I guess were, I don't know if they still are this way, but it, that shit was running super late. So we won the upper bracket and, you know, we had to wait for the lower bracket to finish. And by that time it was like, you know, probably like 1 a.m. or some shit. It was super late. Yeah. And I can't drive. I'm like probably 14 years old, 15 years old or some shit like that. And my mom comes and she's outside. She's like, I'm leaving in like 15 minutes. And I'm like, wait, what do you mean?
As in when you play the match?
Yeah, like, no, we haven't even started the final.
Oh, my God, right, okay.
Yeah, and so I'm like, I can't leave. Like, I can't leave. And I'm like, I remember, like, crying in the parking lot, like, begging her, like, okay, let me finish this shit. Like, my teammates are going to hate me. And basically, I had to go inside and be like, yo, like, I got to leave. So we had to change the format. So it was, like, a best of one in the finals. We had to run it down. We lost and got second place, and I left. And that was my first LAN.
Because obviously after this, one of the teams at the end of 1.6, if anyone remembers the scene, they will know you from, is when you played for the one where it changed the orgs a bunch. It was like full game and then back to back and then like next. It was the one where basically it was Senfis's crew, where if people don't know, Senfis at the time had a team of like Canadian players. There was like the BN guy and the Element guy, not Element. He actually was copying his name. These guys were already in a team for a while and people knew Senfis. In fact, here's the interesting detail though that I always do reference. At the time, even though he was an invite player, Senfis also was, and this is, I'm not even making this up, it's real, he was also a famous Gottfrag internet troll. He was called Terminator or Gottfrag, and he used to be like, I think, like the biggest Edward fanboy or something. I forget which exactly. I think it was, he was the fan of Edward and Neo, I think, with his two, that he was like the Stan of, like, there wasn't even Stan concept back then, but he was the original Stan basically. He used to like do that thing where you post like this. It's like, essentially the joke is he really was like a Hitchell TV user, you know, when like they lose the game now, Sean, if Vitality lose, you go, you know, Zebu fans come here, and then you like insult them. He was almost like the guy doing that but for his players, right? So at the time, Senfis already known as a character. And in fact, back then, obviously people might remember this, he was really fat back then. He was a ridiculous, like, South Park-esque nerd, right? How did he get with this crew of people? Because, like I say, it very much was Senfis's team, as far as I remember. Like, him and the BN guy, I think, just ran the team and did what they want. And even back then, I remember, dude, it's funny because in your later teams, he was a bit like this. But Senfis never, as far as I know, wanted to be the in-game leader, but he always had tons of, like, weird ideas, like, you know, some fucking weird boost that no one's done or some push that we're going to do to get steel one round. Like, was it like that when you joined this team? What was it like joining this group of people? Because this is the team that really got to the, actually, like, a pro career after this, right?
Yeah. So, like, this is after my Steno days, and I hooked up with Senfis at that point because he was insane. Like, he was an incredible talent within the scene, and everything he said is so true. Like, imagine the effort it takes to get into bodybuilding and be how big Senfis is. That was, all of that effort was poured into, like, trolling back then. Like,
yes, exactly.
It was actually unreal how much this guy trolled back then. Like, it was fucking unreal. And he would be in our scrims making Steno irate. And so, like, my perception of Senfis was, like, this guy's a fucking asshole, but he's really fucking good. And like I said, like, I wanted to be on the best teams possible. And so I ended up talking with Senfis, and I was quickly like, man, this guy's awesome. Like, he is a super nice person. Like, he wouldn't harm a fly. Like, and this whole, like, act of trolling, like, this is just him having fun. Because if you actually talk to Senfis, you'll realize, like, he has such a good heart. Like, he is a really good person. And that's what I realized back then. And we were both just like in love with the game, right? All we would do was just want to grind. And
oh, he's another guy, if people don't know, would go in the empty server and do the smokes and the flight, all that shit. Yeah, of course.
He would be the one that was like awake with me at, like, you know, the wee hours of the night, watching the tournaments in Europe and shit, and watching tournaments like all around the world, because that was hard back then. Like, there wasn't a lot of, it's not like it is today, you know, like, where the tournaments were kind of catered for the North American fan base. I think it was just like, fuck it, we're just going to, like, air this shit whenever.
It's like you said earlier, mate, it was the same even for LANs back then. Like, a DreamHack, it's the same thing. The final might end at midnight or 1 a.m. So for you guys, it might be like, well, it depends which course you're on. It could be ridiculous, yeah. Could be like 8 a.m. West Coast time or something to take a place. Who knows, right?
Yeah, I don't think, like, the schedules were even catered for, like, the regions back then, though.
I don't think so.
When I You know how, like, now these days when there's, like, a tournament in Europe, they try to put, like, the NA match.
Yes.
At, like, so say the tournament starts at, like, you know, like, 12 in Europe. They'll start that shit with, like, let's see. They're, like, 8 hours, 9 hours ahead. They'll start with, like, the EU matches, and they'll end with an NA match. Yes. So that way it's on NA time. So that way the NA fan base can, like, wake up for that. I swear that, like, didn't exist back then. It was just like, well, fuck it. We'll just put, like, this team here, that team there, like, whatever. Like, and all right, cool. It's good. Because, like, I don't think they were selling many sponsorships. No. And I don't really know what
I mean, some of the time, these weren't even sometimes on stream. You would just watch them through the game, right? It's not like it is now.
Bro, I think back to those days, and I'm like, every tournament was just money laundered money. Like,
it was on some level, let's be real. Yeah.
I mean, dude, those Arbolit Cups back then.
Where they pay you, like, in the cash literally in your hand in like 25. There you go, there's your 25K. So yeah. Came out the ATM a minute ago.
Yes. Yes.
With big bands on and everything. Yeah.
Literally go around Dallas, Texas, pulling out money from ATMs.
When you get handed it, you think it's like Tony Soprano or something, and you're like, I don't know, but is this legal to get this? Like, I've heard it was like that, yeah.
Yes. It was fucking so weird. It was so weird how, like, there was just all cash on hand, like, in hindsight.
By the way, though, to bring it back to what you were talking about, though, this emphasis point, that's also not a minor issue. Like, if people don't know, like you're saying, because it's, like, you have to essentially live Counter-Strike to watch these tournaments. Back then, if someone, like, I'll give you an example, former teammate yours, the Evolution guy was, like, a good AWP who played a Complexity. I doubt he's up at 3 a.m. watching some European DreamHack game. Like, his thing would be, like, he plays in America in Pogs now, goes to the NA LAN, and then if that happens to be an American LAN, then maybe, you know, maybe then he figures out who they are. Like, people like that, they weren't people, even though we're all pro gamers in a sense, people weren't nerds in the same way. They were, like you're saying, it's actually, there are just a handful of people like you and Semphis and Lopez, etc., who were going super hammered it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, we would be finding, like, weird shit. Like, Semphis was the type of player that'd be like, all right, come in the server, I want to try this, like, run, or it wasn't like a run boost back then in 1.6. You would shoot people.
You could make them fly
on your
up
head,
yeah.
And you would jump, and the person on the bottom would shoot you. And this sounds outrageous because, like, you're TKing your teammate, but you would get them in these fucking insane positions. Like, I remember on Forge, there was a map called Forge back then. You can go in, like, these A halls, and Semphis and Elliot found this gun boost, that's what we'd call them, where you could just shoot someone up, like, in the sky. And there was no way anyone was clearing it. And we were, like, blowing people's mind with this stuff. And that was really fun to me. Like, literally innovating on that level while being on the best team in NA at the time was super fun, yeah.
Must have also in this team been cool, like I say, to actually be like, this is when, in the first times you were in this, this is when Evil Geniuses still existed with, like, Lurpis and Fraud and Nothing and all those guys, like the real pro team that's getting paid the salary and has all the, like, a team house and everything. Like, was it fun to actually be mixing it up with teams like this?
Well, I think actually they went to Source. So, like, my emergence in the 1.6 scene was, I guess, luckily, due to the fact that Source took a lot of the players away and they went to CGS, and I played Source at the time, and I was like, this game is fucking dog shit. Like, I'm not playing Source. There's just no way. There's no way I'm playing this game. And I stuck to 1.6 while all of those players went and played Source. And then I think some of them tried to come back, and they just were never the
players. They were the same level, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, Fraud came back, and he was on, like, Check 6 at the time with Hiko and, like, some of the
at
other
the end,
players.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they were a really good team, but I don't think they were ever as good as us. I think it was, like, Fraud, Storm, Warden, Hiko, and, like, I don't remember who the fifth was actually right now.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Right, what about what we should do, we'll stay on topic actually. Since the interview's long, obviously, like I say, we're not going to do everything. Well, since we've talked about the topic of Semphis, let's talk about, like, playing with him in general, because you played with him for a lot of years actually. Like I say, back then, like, the idea you'd play with someone for, like, 3, 4, 5 years is ridiculous back then. Like, there's very few players you can be with for that long. Everyone used to cycle in and out of teams when you lose, right? How did you two stick together for so long? Because even though, like you say, I can see where there's a shared interest, that, like, you both do really love Counter-Strike and want to find innovative stuff, but at the same time, though, Sean, when I'm thinking of people who might irritate Sean Gares, I'd imagine there's times where maybe you're a bit more serious than him. Maybe the trolling gets annoying. And as I alluded to earlier, I almost think Senfis like got too addicted to trying to like do like, I mean, there's no real term for it. I guess people say scrimmy, but that doesn't really mean anything in the modern day. But that term would be, if you know from Dota, it's like the concept of like rat Dota, where you play like really annoying way just to piss people off. But like you can win doing that because like no one wants to play. Because essentially, like it's like a more extreme version of what like Jayme does in Counter-Strike now, where like his players, style of play is a nightmare, but no one can figure it out. Like Senfis, to me, for some reason, he always wanted to have some weird edge like that. He always, like, you might know this. He would want to do stuff in, like, proper Counter-Strike when people like Fnatic and Nip already come along. Well, not the beginner CSGO. He'd want to do, like, a shotgun rush up middle or something, you know, on, like, a half buy or something. Like, was there ever any disconnect in that regard? Were you always on the same page, do you think?
We definitely, so if there was, like, I imagine, like, there's, like, a spectrum, right? And we were always somewhere on this spectrum where it was, like, this is after my Steno days, right? So I'm, like, thinking about rotations a lot, thinking about all of this stuff. And Senfis is very, like, dual-oriented at the time. And he had an immense amount of confidence in himself, but he had, like, super bad internet and... So he would die, and a lot of the times he would like blame like, oh, this guy's scrimming or my internet is really bad. And I hated that. I hated that. That was like, and we would always have like slight disagreements and stuff like that. We would never really, you know, it would never be too bad. Like we were very good at communicating with each other in serious ways and understanding what the other person wanted. And that's what that's why I think I got along with Senfis for so long, is just he understood me and my goals, and that if I did get angry or say something, that I had the best intentions of the team, right? Like, I don't want him deflecting and giving excuses for deaths, because after every death, I don't want to hear like, oh, this guy got lucky. Like, I don't want to hear that. Like, I just don't want to hear that. And it's like a bad seed that is planted within the team, right? If all of...
Becomes contagious if one person does it, right?
Exactly. If one person is scrimming and one person is like doing all this stuff, scrimming is, for lack of better definition for those of you that don't know, it's just like playing too loose, like playing like drawing outside of the lines of the playbook, yes, right? Like playing off of feeling all the time. And like, oh, I got timing. Like I'm going to do this play. I'm like, bro... Stop, like just stop and let's like actually play the round how it is. But I would also understand that when we would go to land, those plays would be very important for us winning, right? Like, or when we were in a big match, those plays were very important for us to winning. So that time frame really helped me understand that, like, okay, this isn't about like who can, you know, color in the prettiest picture. It's not like that, but it's also not like about drawing a picture from scratch. Like, I need to find this delicate balance and where like I can allow my star players to make these plays, but at the same time there needs to be structure. And that's what playing with Senfis really helped me figure it out. Like Steno wasn't down to give players those freedoms, right? Like, I actually think playing with Steno really fucked me up as a player, because I wasn't, like I said, I was an opper. I thought of myself as skilled. But when I played with him, I was so rigid in this system. Like, I couldn't play off of feel. I couldn't play off of, like, the music that was playing that I was talking about before, right? Like, I now had to, like, take an angle, think about rotations, only hit certain timings. And it just took me out of, like, a flow state, right? I was overthinking. I was overcomplicating things. And Senfis was, like, the opposite end of that spectrum for me that helped me get back to the center. And I think that is an element of him that I always respect. I was like, oh, this is like a totally different way to play the game that also works. I think we can mix these styles and have something special.
I'm just going to say this very briefly. You can say however much you want on it. Did it not piss you off when he got kicked and he came out of that interview and said everyone was on Adderall and that fucking land? Like, because to me, that's one of those things. Look, I totally get from his side if he's a bit cheesed at Cloud9 or he just thought, fuck it, he did it. But like, if I were you guys, I'd be like, bro, you just basically named us all. Like, you just said we all did it. Like, what the hell? Just say you did it or something. Like, were you not pissed off at that? Did that not get to you a bit?
Honestly, didn't really care too much.
Okay, fair enough.
Like I said, I know Semphis as a person, like, has, like, good intentions. I don't think he meant anything by it or anything like that. Like, I don't... It also wasn't as serious as what people, like, made it out to be. It was so fucking overblown. It's not like our team was just on Adderall all the fucking time, like, doing this shit. Like, it was so overblown at the time. But I understand, and... Yeah, I don't think I was too upset.
Fair enough.
It rubbed me the wrong way at first because I was like, God damn it, dude. Semphis is like, I don't think he even realized like what.
No, I think he just dropped everyone in it, didn't he? Yeah, it seemed like he almost did it by accident, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm not going to get mad at him for that. No, yeah, I still talk to Semphis every now and then. Obviously, he's not like really in my circle, really, because Valorant shit. But yeah, no, not like I hate him for that.
No, it's all good. Right. One thing I want to ask briefly, because we're going to get into all the CSGO stuff now, is when CSGO began, and remember, if people remember, like you were saying, in 1.6, it's not like you were making much salary anyway from those invite teams, but like when CSGO begins, everyone did think the game was even smaller and there's going to be even less opportunity. So like, I noticed early on, you were on that team where it was the Area 51 team, where it was essentially like Semphis, Hiko, Dazed, and it was essentially like Dazed's crew of people, if people don't know. And then after that, they basically made a team without you after that, which became the Quantic team that everyone knows. And then eventually Semphis and Hiko came back and you remade the squad, right? Early on, when you were first in this team, like when you're in a team with Dazed, is Dazed the IGL? Are you the IGL? Early on, I noticed after this team, you basically did almost no lands for like something like 6 months or something, dude. So were you actually going hard at CSGO in the early days? Could you have been in this team properly if you wanted to? And who was the IGL?
Ooh, so were we going hard? We were not going hard in CSGO at first. So we won the last CS 1.6 LAN, which was like 10K first place. I remember because I didn't report the attack. I didn't report it. And then I got audited, which is insane.
Like, I've never heard that happen to anyone, dude. Even people who make millions in esports. You got audited. Fucking hell.
I got fucking audited when I was like 18 years old or something. Oh. Like, and the IRS was like, yo, you didn't pay taxes on this $2,000. Like, I mean, like, less than 20 grand this year. Like, okay. This is insane. Okay. So immediately, like right off the bat, like ever since then, I'm like, bro, I'm paying every
cent. Of course.
Cent.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm paying every cent to the government. I'm not getting locked in a fucking cage. Like, so that was like my last experience with 1.6. And then coming into Go, we like didn't play it. And then there wanted to be like a show match between like us and Team Dynamic, because we were like the best team in 1.6 and they were the best team in Source.
Right. Okay.
And there was so many Source similarities within the game. I'll never forget, there was this show match and it was like me, Semphis, Swag, Elliot, and Nothing. That was our team. And we played against like Team Dynamic with like Anger, Pex, fuck,
maybe dude. Adren or someone like
Adren, that. Adren, yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Like all of those guys and AZK and me. Yeah. And they just, I want to say the only map was Dust. The only map was Dust. And I want to say they beat us 20.
Okay.
What was it? Like, fucking bro, they literally blanked us. Like, I don't think we won a single round in two maps of Dust.
Oh, they won like whatever, like 30-0 or whatever. Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
they're
32-0. Yeah,
yeah, they're waiting in the server for us to join. We're like 10 minutes late because Nothing, myself, and Swagger all fucking downloading the game. Like, we don't even have it. These guys have like Molotov lineups,
right?
And back then, Molotovs didn't blow up in the air. They could literally, you could just throw them across the entire map. These guys had like pre-Molotov lineups and shit. They knew the mechanics of Source. It was like fucking the 95 Bulls going into the YMCA and playing like a random pickup game.
Right.
It was insane. Like, we felt like we stood no chance, and the game just felt terrible. So yeah, that was our first experience with Go. And then when we picked up Dazed, he taught us a lot about Source, right? Because we quickly realized at the time, we were like, bro, this game, Elliot didn't want to play it. So that was the guy you were talking about earlier. And we ended up picking up Dazed, and Dazed didn't IGL. I IGL'd the whole time,
right?
But he helped me a lot understand the Source mechanics and like how the flashes work, how the smokes work, how like peeking works, like how opping works. Because in Go, there's the peeker's advantage was wild.
Yes.
I felt like I couldn't op anymore. Like, I felt like It was so fucking crazy.
If people don't know, it's almost the opposite in 1.6. Like in 1.6, the guy waiting on the angle is usually the one who wins this fight, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then quickly in Go, it was like, oh, this guy that's like wide swinging. Like yes. You actually have to like pre-aim a little bit further. You have to maybe be holding like off angles. You have to peek into them. Like you have to be, that's when like jiggle peeking and stuff like that really became like super prevalent. And Days taught me like a lot of that stuff, but obviously our personalities like kind of like butt heads. I was also getting my master's at the time. I had just graduated college, I believe, and I was working. And I think, so this was Area 51. We won the qualifier for ESWC.
Yep.
We beat Team Dynamic. So like this was the next time I think we played them after we didn't win a single round. Like we ended up going to this ESWC qualifier in Seattle, which was going on inside PAX when like Worlds for League of Legends were going and TI maybe. Like everything was in this city at once. It was like nerds everywhere. It was fucking so cool. It was the coolest thing I'd ever seen at the time. I remember because there was a hurricane. This is so fucking weird. There was a hurricane in New Orleans. I was living in New Orleans, working at my cousin's company while I was going to school. And I couldn't make it. I thought I couldn't make it to PAX to go to this event. And my teammates were like going to be devastated. And I was like, this fucking sucks. Like this sucks. There's no flights that are leaving New Orleans. Like I'm so fucked. And they got to all go in like the Valve headquarters. And if you go, you can actually, I think a lot of the players recorded stuff with Valve at the time. Like Senthis has a video with Valve in the headquarters that he recorded back then. And I was so jealous. I was so fucking jealous that they got to go inside the Valve headquarters in Seattle. But I ended up making it like the day before the tournament. We ended up winning the tournament and we go to ESWC and that's when we placed like third, I think in Paris. That was my first, I think, international event, and it was amazing. Like, it was, I was like in love with the city. I was in love with the game. Like, everything just felt so magical with like esports in that moment. You know, like, I could feel stuff like building, but then at the same time, there was no money. Like, there was no money at all back then. And we had no salary on Area 51. You know, like there was nothing to do. So I ended up just being like, you guys have Dazed on the team. Like he can IGL, like we're butting heads a little bit. Like I'm just going to step down. Like this is.
Was there a real chance you maybe just retired then and there was no more CS potentially?
Yeah. So like I took a break for like a long time actually. Like, and I was kind of just like working on like myself and school and like working and stuff like that full time. But yeah, that's what I was doing at the time.
Because the other thing is, obviously, after this, you then made the Complexity lineup that people know with, like, Hiko and Swag and Senthis and all the rest of them, etc. Right? That core of players, I would say, even though it actually didn't play together that long, it was like a year or something, it's pretty well known. Like, people probably do quite fondly remember that team. Right? Was that team Sean Gare's Counter-Strike? If people go and watch a demo from there, if I pull up a demo from 2013, you know, with Complexity or something, would it be like proper, would that represent who you were as an in-game leader? Was that your philosophy? Did the players listen to you? Did they do what you said?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I think so. So like around that time, you know, like I said, I was like working and doing school and stuff like that. And then things kind of fell apart with Dazed and that team, like, you know,
just imploded as far as I know.
They had all like
issues
with imploded
in personality and shit, right?
So they came to me at that point and they're like, hey, we need like an in-game leader. Like, we'd really like to play with you again. Are you interested in playing? Are you interested in competing? Do you have time? Like, is this something you're passionate about? I was like, I actually didn't remember this until you're bringing it up right now, but I was very on the fence about coming back and playing. I was like, there's no fucking money. It's a waste of my time. But I was also, my competitive itch was just crazy. Like I needed it back in my life. And so I said yes, and I joined Complexity. And it helped a lot that that was my first like true salary. And again, like salary compared to now when there's VC money involved.
I'm going to guess you talk like $500 or something, right? A month.
300.
There you go, 300.
So like, We're not talking a lot of money, but okay. It's enough to kind of like get by and at very least be like, okay, like there's hope. There's like, I can like kind of like scrape by, and I already have my degree. So it's like, I guess I can kind of like free roll here for a little bit, see what happens. And yeah, that was like a really cool team. It was like me, Swag, Nothing, Semphis, and who am I forgetting?
Hiko. Fuck.
Hiko, yes. It sounds like a pretty insane team, and it was a pretty insane team at the time, yeah.
Yes. Now, obviously, this era as well was where actually, I think this is where a lot of your like status as a player individually came from, because if people remember this team, it had that, there was the really weird dichotomy where if you were in NA, the Dazed iBuyPower lineups were like loads of skilled players and a lot of the Source players. And remember, in NA, they would like win the ESEA LAN, but famously your team, when you went internationally, they were famous for like bombing all the majors and they would always get out in the group stage. And if they went to Europe, they played half as well, it seemed like. Your team had the opposite profile, which was you might not be the dominant team in NA, but famously when you went to Europe or a major on CPL, you were always in the mix. Like you could play against the NIPs or the very games of the world. Is there something about this particular group of players? Why did your team actually, why was your like the one lone NA team that could somehow match up against the Europeans? Was it something about the style, the mentality? What was it? What was it enabling you to do this, do you think?
I think Daze had like a really good read on maybe like the things I liked doing at the time, like in hindsight. And I did like research a lot into like all the teams we played, but it seemed like when we played iBuyPower or whatever team Daze was on at the time, like, you know, like they had really good, I don't even want to say like counters. They had crazy individual plays. Like, they knew when to make individual plays against us. Like, that's when they had, I'm pretty sure, like, Skadoodle, AZK. Like, those guys were fucking insane when they played against us. They would have huge pop-off games.
I mean, even Daze could pop off if people didn't know. Even he was a fragger sometimes, yeah.
Like, they had an op presence, too, that, like, we just didn't have with Skadoodle. And Skadoodle, like, was very hard to deal with in the early days of Go. Like, he was incredible. He was... people thought he was like cheating back then. Like he was so insane. He was so insane. And when they would go to like LANs and tournaments and stuff, that like loose play style that they were playing with just like wasn't working. But they also knew like how we were playing. I don't know, maybe because Daze played with me, he knew how I like calling or something. It just seemed like they had a really good read on the things we liked doing. It was very difficult to beat them because they had immense skill and a good IGL. Yeah.
What about in terms of you guys, though? Because like I say, famously, even when NIP was like, they never used to lose any of the LANs. You were like one of the actual few teams in general in the world that could actually give them the odd game that was good. Everyone remembers when Swag dropped that 30 bomb at that major. So like every time you would play them, there'd always be like at least a map that was close, or you'd be, it looked like you had a chance to beat them.
Yeah, I think like it's because a lot of the stuff that we were doing at the time, like I was modeling after these teams and I was kind of building off of it, and we really knew what to expect, right? Like I did a lot of, I don't want to say anti-shredding, it's just like a lot of prep with the like watching other teams' demos, understanding what they do, calling around those things, right? So say we had like a playbook of like 50 strats. Obviously, you can't run all of those. I would determine which ones would work the best and like what style of play would be best against this team. And I was learning like a lot about like game planning and stuff like that around that time frame. And I think also we had huge mid-round potential, which I don't think like iBuyPower necessarily had maybe at the time. We had very vocal players that were willing to make important calls. Like Swag made some really important calls in like the very games group match the first major.
Okay.
Like the last round where we faked them and we go B and then we go to A. That was like all Swag mid-rounding that.
Right.
And then Nothing was also willing to do that. Semphis was willing to do that. Hiko, not so much at the time, but he was like a star player. So I just think we had like so many voices on the team that were capable of like taking over a round, and that helped a lot when there was a lot of variance from these EU teams.
By the way, along those lines, if people don't know, like the best way to illustrate it is if people look it up, I'll see what, I think I actually had it open here. Yes. Okay. So in 2013, Heiko was ninth on HLTV's top 20 players in the world. So like that says, I don't even need to say the numbers. That tells you right there, he was considered a true star player, almost on like a European level. Like the idea is, this is a guy who can actually go head to head with, not literally, but you know, the get right to the world and those like stud players that everyone knew, right? How do you use a player like that? Because if people might know, this team was the one where he really developed, like he kind of was trying to be like get right, the permalurker, right? Was that actually something you guys agreed upon? Were you cool with that? Like, did you know how to use someone in that way? Because obviously that style of play, if it's not like integrated into the team, can be selfish, right? It can sometimes be someone baiting, but it seemed like in your team, it worked great. That's why he was getting the star plaudits. The team was good. So how did he use Heiko?
Yeah, that was like really tricky at the time. And I think if like it was current day, it wouldn't work really as well as it did back then. But I did trust Heiko a lot because of like what I was seeing in practice and like previous matches and stuff like that. I knew he was like our closer, right? Like I didn't want this guy going in first, second, third. Like I wanted him alive in the late rounds. And I wanted him to play positions where he could have like the most impact in those late rounds. So, you know, say we're playing like, you know, like Dust 2 or some shit like that. Like I want him using his, like if we need to smoke mid to take cat or something like that, or smoke Xbox, or, you know, like do like a long fake early round to draw util and just see if they're playing long or something like that. I want that to be Hiko's util. So that way, you know, like he doesn't feel pressured to like be with the pack and use util. And then he can just focus on, you know, like lurking and finding timings and giving us the info we need as we work something as like a three or as a four set. So there'd be a lot of like 3-1-1s or 4-1s where I would allow Heiko to say like on overpass, just like sit outside a monster or, you know, like lurk into short B and like play off of sound, play off of feeling and try to find pockets while the group is being like super aggressive. And it took a lot of tinkering and practice and being like, yo, you're going too passive. You're going too aggressive. Like you can't do this. You can't do that. But eventually like he found this really nice sweet spot and he really understood the meta at a super high level in 2013.
Right, obviously people, if they're old school fans, might know I was quite friendly with Heiko actually. And so I can tell you actually some of the things I remember him talking about back then. I'm not going to be speaking out of school here. I'm pretty sure he said all these things in interviews. But if people remember, famously, he actually left Cloud9 when, as far as I know, there was no reason he had to. Like at the time, he could have signed a new contract. You'd keep the same team. You would have gone into, I think it was 2015 it would have been, and everything could have kept going. But from what I remember, Sean, the problem was because he himself was billed as a star. So he's thinking, right, I should be at like a championship level. As far as I know, I think he got annoyed with some of the other members. Like, for example, some of the things I said about Senfiz probably annoyed him a bit. The idea of you not being that serious or playing like default style. I know back then, we can get into it later, but there's reasons why someone like Nothing, he might not think he's dedicated enough. Let's put it that way, you know. Obviously, people might know Swag did leave and fuck off to iBad Power. Like, what I want to know is this. I know from Eco's side why he left. And look, we can argue whether it was right or not. Like, he got some results. Some things weren't as great. The question I have for you is this. Did you feel betrayed by it? Was there any bad blood between you when he left?
I felt a bit betrayed, yeah. I'm not going to lie. Like, I think, obviously, like, Spencer and I now are, like, great friends. Like, you know.
It seems like you're both similar sorts of people in the game. I can see you could get along very well, right?
Yeah, but I was definitely like blindsided by it because we had spent like months in Europe boot camping. I think this is when I dropped out of my master's program and we decided to like boot camp over there. And I remember we played.
It was like three different lands or something, wasn't it? It was like Face, ESWC in the major or something, I think it was, right?
Yeah, and then we also like spent time at like the Logitech headquarters in Switzerland.
Oh, right.
Like, we were hopping around everywhere, which is why I dropped out of my master's program. I had the option to stay out there. And this is when, you know, like we were making like a couple grand a month. Again, like not life-changing money. But I decided when I was out there, I called my parents. I'm like, I'm dropping my master's program. I'm not coming back home. I'm staying out here. That was like one of the hardest decisions I've had to make. And my parents were fucking livid. Like they were fucking livid. They're like, we're not helping you pay off this bill for your master's program. Like, good luck. Like, I was also like in a long-term relationship a long-term relationship at the time. So I had to tell my girlfriend at the time, like, yeah, I'm not coming back. Like, I'm staying out here for months. Like, yeah, it was a really hard decision where I had to like chase something that I was super passionate about. And there was a lot of fucking angry people right. about it, but it was like, I'm doing me right now. Like, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm passionate about. And we grinded that boot camp. We were insane. Like, I don't think we lost.
Oh, I've heard you actually were wrecking everyone in scrims from the Europeans. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Dude, I don't think we lost a single Inferno scrim. Not one.
Right.
Like, it was insane. And then we went into, I think it was like the major, right? And that was the major where I want to say like Simple was standing in for a Hellraisers or some shit.
It was just on Hellraisers, but it was the one where they bodied you on Inferno. Yeah.
Yeah. We lost like two Inferno games. And it was Hiko and Nothing at the B site. And they had like a lot of like bickering and disagreements like leading up into this tournament. Hiko had like a lot of problems with Jordan's dedication. Jordan had a lot of problems with Hiko's like way of communicating that. Like sometimes Hiko would be like playing like Hearthstone on his like iPad while I was like going over stuff.
Oh, and, right. Like, okay.
Like Jordan didn't like that. So like they didn't communicate very well with each other. I didn't do a good job of facilitating that. We didn't have a coach. Like, you know, like there's so many things about this time frame that just it operated way differently, right? Like also we're living in the fucking like QPAD offices in Sweden. Like there's a room inside of their offices with like three bunk beds. And we're just living in there for like months. We're showering there. Like they had to create a shower. Like, so the shower would flood and we would have to squeegee it into a drain. There's no money. There's no money in esports, dude. Like there's no money.
It's not glamorous.
We're going back there, Duncan. It's just going to be a couple of years. We're going back. but it was crazy because I felt like we had this brotherhood. And then after the tournament, it was like, I start hearing like, you know, like I didn't want to calm with this person or that person. I was like, bro, we didn't lose a single fucking Inferno scrim. And you guys come into the major and allow your emotions to just actually fuck us. Like you actually fucked us here. And I don't know. I don't know like why exactly Spencer didn't really want to play with us. I think it's like you saying, like there's a lot of disagreements with Nothing and Senfis at the time. And they wanted me to cut Nothing. And I didn't want to do it because I thought he was so pivotal to maintaining like an emotional balance within the team. Because in addition to like the whole, you know, like strategy aspect of the game, which I thought like Senfis and myself were kind of in control of, I knew it was important to maintain like a good emotional state within a team. Just that way, like we're vibing out, we're having a good time. And Nothing provided like a lot of the relief, like the humor relief, like within.
He's kind of a naturally happy-go-lucky person, and he's like always got it's always vibing, right?
Yeah. So I thought Nothing was like super important to like keeping like the emotional level of the team like balanced. And even though I thought he kind of had some negative characteristics, I thought it was worth it. Like I thought those things did not matter. I thought his skill was insane and what he brought to the team was something that we couldn't replace. And that's, I never thought it would cause Hiko to leave the team. And it did. Like it actually just, you know, like it turned out he was having these conversations the whole time in the background and he ended up leaving the team like after ESEA LAN. And I found out about all this from Stunna, who let me know. So after the major, we had to go back and we played like the ESEA LAN finals or some shit like that, which is where we lost to like Shazam's team, Denial. But our team was like literally just dead. Our team was dead at that tournament. Right. So apparently, like I didn't know this at the time, but like Stunna told me, it's like, yeah, like, yeah, I think Jack was like thinking about having like two teams or some shit at the time, like letting Hiko make his.
Oh yeah, the idea was you could have a second team. You're right. Yes, I remember that was another offer he had. I think was like stay in the org, but you build this team, and we'll just get a different guy for your spots. But yeah,
yeah, there's a lot of like weirdness like that I'm not super privy to, but all I know is that our team was like literally just dead in the water at that point.
Okay. Right. Along these lines, then, let me ask, this is an obvious place to ask the nothing question. You've set me up perfectly, Sean, because here's the problem, right? Which is, if someone's a really casual fan, right? Nothing is one of the big names in Counter-Strike. If people don't know, if people go down that list of names, which funnily enough, some of these classic names are still bigger than the Zwoos and the best players now. If you go down the list of names, you know, of like Get Right, Pasha, Scream, I'll give Jordan his credit. He's on that list. He's one of those like iconic players that everyone knows and is super popular. But the reason I set that up like this, Sean, is because he's almost universally loved. Everyone loves his style of play, his personality. But what they might not know is behind the scenes, like you say, there were certain aspects that some people didn't like. Like, first of all, I mean, I believe he's been fairly open about this now, and he's obviously not like an actual pro anymore. He's someone who smoked weed. Now, look, that doesn't have to be a big deal, like a lot of people do. But in his case, I would say combine that with sometimes being, I wouldn't even say he's a pure slacker. He's more someone who likes to have fun, which sometimes means you slack instead of doing hard work and things that are boring. There's definitely that aspect. So, for example, if someone's a super try-hard, they're not going to vibe with that. Then, even though, like you say, I agree, if you want, like, the personality balance of the team, it's a concept I've had to learn myself over the years, mate. I'm like every HLTV fan. Back in the day, I would have just put all the skilled players and made the star team, but what you learn over the years is the social dynamic definitely affects how good the team is and whether it can even work. So, even though he definitely brings some positives to that, some people would also say, some people found him annoying to play with, or in your case, maybe he didn't always remember the strat. There's from that famous clip, if everyone remembers, where like in the like ESL mod, you're like, you're telling him like, save this round. He's like, I bought a Galil. It's like, what the bro, we're at like the fucking major now, whatever, like, or Pro League or whatever. Like, so there's certain things that like, they're funny to say about now in a video, but I can see why this would annoy some people. But as you said, to you, like, what he brought to the team made it worth it, essentially, even if it's difficult to deal with.
Yeah, I think like he, all of those things were just things I just knew I was getting with the package, right? And I grew up in, you know, the CS 1.6 scene with nothing. Like, I remember him just terrorizing that scene and everyone thinking he was cheating. I remember nothing but like, so like I knew his star player potential. I saw it so many times. Like, I knew what he was capable of. I thought he was very good at communicating, like way ahead of his years.
Oh,
like,
okay.
He was really good at expressing his feelings and letting the team know like kind of what he wanted. But he had so many problems at the time with like what he wanted to do within the game. Like, he didn't know, like, and that drew, I forgot about this, that drove Hiko a little crazy, because Jordan wanted to be like the entry fragger, then he wanted to be the support player.
If people don't know, there's a weird thing where he had, I remember actually talking about this from 1.6, he had some weird thing, Sean, where he believed like that if you're skilled like him, you should try and be like an all-round player and you should be able to do every role like you're saying. Whereas like, what you're getting at is, if me or you had to like, you know, like let's say it was like Space Jam, it's like we have to win one match against aliens, we would just put him as like, I don't know, like an entry fragger or something and just tell him like, go in now. But he actually did, like you're saying, he wanted to do everything. I want to be like the clutch master who wins then, but also like, I want like secondary. He thought he could do everything in the game, right?
Yeah. Well, we had him in like an entry role, I think. It was like him and it was weird because we had no like true entry at the time. So I remember I was like opping, but like I would also end up like entering at times. Like, it was so fucking weird because Jordan didn't really have like, that mentality to like be willing to run in and just kind of like die for the team so that way we could get the right spacing and trading. But I also think he would have been fucking insane in that. He would have been the best entry fragger in the world.
Yes. His aim was mega.
He would have been. But those star player mentality is like, they don't want to do that.
Yes.
Which is why eventually we ended up bringing like Freakazoid into the team. Like, we wanted someone to do that. We wanted someone to just be willing to die for the team so that way we understood exactly how to like kind of enter the site. Like, say like you do an exec, like the entry is like slightly ahead, and once that person gets kind of shot or figures out stuff, you know, like everything is so easily solved at that point. But Jordan didn't really, like, he would do it, but he would be very hesitant, which would then like mess up the timings a little bit. It wasn't a good role for him. It really wasn't, like, at the time. And we were kind of like, you know, jamming, you know, the square peg into the round hole kind of thing. And that was a huge problem, I think.
Right. As you've alluded to, another thing people might not know is because of your 1.6 career and who the personnel you had in this Cloud9 core was, pre-Scudel, you were the AWPer in the team, if people don't know that. Because if you look at these players, none of these players are natural AWPers. Like, maybe like Semphis would fuck around for one half or something, you know, but none of these players, these are all in theory riflers. So if people don't know, like, first of all, I'm sure you will acknowledge you weren't as good a CSGO player individually as you were in 1.6, that you didn't have good stats, but you were essentially, you actually remind me a little bit of how like Nitro did it in Team Liquid. You didn't force it. You weren't like the primary AWPer all the time. And definitely everyone wasn't like saving an AWP super hard to give it to you. But you would do it right mainly on like the CT sides where it made sense. Like if you play like a new customer, I'm guessing you're going to do it. Like, how would you describe that? How much did you AWP? By the way, how do you run a Counter-Strike team and try and compete with the best teams without a really good AWP? I mean, this is the era when people like Guardian, Kenius exist.
Well, I was very good at, like, how do I explain this? Like holding like flat angles, like off angles and stuff like that. I was very good at those things, but I found I was like over communicating at the time and I wasn't focused on my crosshair enough, like as an in-game leader. I had a lot of difficulties with that and I wasn't confident enough. Like I remember like holding, you know, like on Dust 2, like the T is just like hold the cross. Like I did not feel comfortable holding that cross. Because like the way that in Go people would peek into you as CT, like yes. They would literally just like peek into you at the start and they would almost have like an advantage if you weren't in like specific angles.
Yep.
And it took me a long time to like figure those things out. But when it came to like opping car and then like taking my shot, angling off, taking my shot, angling off, taking my shot, angling off, like I was really good at that. I was insanely good at doing those things with the op and I kind of knew my strengths. But I also knew that, like, I didn't want to do this. Like, it was very difficult for me to op an in-game lead because I was a fucking control freak back then. Like, I microed everything. Like, I did so much communicating for the team. And I don't think, like, an opper should be doing those things. Like, I really don't. I think they should be very focused on their crosshair. And so when Hiko left the team, it was like, we need to get a fucking opper in here. Like, I'm done with this shit. Like, I'm fucking done opping. Like, no more. I realized that as well. I realized, like, we need, you know, like, we're getting close to winning these tournaments, but we need a star opper.
As a quick side tangent, a sidebar on what you're saying now, another question I have goes like this. As I said earlier, when they did that, like, I think it was actually the ESL Pro League once, the one where, like, Shroud and everyone was awesome up to the finals. When they had that one where they released the comms so you could watch the game and you could literally listen to the actual whole comms of the team. Like I said, there was a few moments that were famous. Like, for example, when nothing, like, misbought in, like, an actual, like, semi-final of the LAN or whatever. And so, as a result, that combined with some of those later, like, there was a clip in Echo Fox, similar one online. My question goes like this, Sean. What's weird is I think people from the outside who don't know you have no read on you, because on the one hand you seem very laid back and chill and like a guy who isn't like super hardcore, but in some of those moments you sound like you like fucking like Bill Belichick or something, mate. You go fucking ham and tell them like trash or something. Like, and all I'll say is I've seen this myself, the Sean Gaze can go 0-60 in quite a fast speed, believe it or not. It's got the accelerator, it's pretty good on that model. So what was it actually like when you were the in-game lead? Like, for example, would you get pissed off at people when they didn't listen to the call, or they weren't paying attention, or you knew they didn't listen in scrims? Would you sort of let some stuff just roll off you and it wouldn't bother you? How, what was your temperament like as an in-game leader?
I was definitely like, that's why I thought nothing was super important in the team, right? Like, people that know me like outside of the game be like, oh well, like what does he mean? Like, this guy's always like in a pretty decent mood. Like, I've never seen him get super upset. But when my reality that I'm living in doesn't align with the expectations that I've crafted, like, as an in-game leader, right? Like, so say like I'm like creating a strat or like doing like this and this and this, and someone's fucking it up, I get very upset. Like, I'm like, bro, you literally are just wasting my time. You're wasting your teammates' time. Like, and, yeah, like I was definitely the critical one always on every team I was on. I felt like, and this is part of the reason why, like, I took breaks from CS. It was like, when you are that person, you feel like no one on your team is your friend. Like, you feel like...
feels like you're like nagging them all the time, right? You feel like you're the wife nagging the guy all the time. He's pissed off at you and everyone... You're, like, ruining everyone's day when you walk in the room, right?
Exactly. Like, I had a lot of, like... like mental struggles with that because, yeah, like I was very critical of my teammates, but I was also very willing to like brush it off. So okay. In these moments, like say like the VOD or whatever, when I'm like yelling at nothing or yelling at Freakazoid or whatever, like I'm sure if you listen to the VOD, you'll realize like the next round, like it's like it rubs right off. Like it's like right. I tell someone what they need to know. If it's serious, I will use a serious tone. Back then I wasn't as good at communicating my frustrations as I am now that I have kids. Like I had to learn these things, like and I think, you know, like when I coached in Valorant, like the way I communicated, I remember like there was a time where the players were like, oh fuck, Coach Gears is like pissed. Like this is like they told me after, they're like, we were literally like scared. Like we were scared.
Ooh, okay.
Because like they respected the fact that I was like always calm and stuff like that. So when I got mad, it meant a lot more. Back then, I think like, you know, like I was always the one correcting everything. There was no coach. You gotta keep in mind, like I was an in-game leader coach. Like I was trying to keep like the mental aspect of the team. Like it was this song and dance I was playing like every day where I had to determine what to go over in practice. And, you know, like I determined like if we needed to innovate, if we didn't, like what we needed to do, like all of those thoughts at the time were like, it felt like I was like the CEO of a company. Like it was a lot of shit that I was doing. But it was so fun. Like it was fun to like have that control, and the players clearly respected me. Right. Like and that's what made it all worth it. Like, not once, I don't think, did any of the players, I mean, maybe behind closed doors that I'm not aware of, but like, they didn't like try to like cut me or anything like that. Even though I was such like a negative Nancy in practice, even though I did act like that, like they respected the fact that I had good intentions. And then at the end of practice, I could, you know, like be calm and like tell them like, hey, like this is what went wrong and this is blah, blah, blah. Like Semphis did make me change the fact though that like I didn't do it like during rounds. So like during rounds and like after rounds, like save it till after the scrim, save it till blah, blah, blah. I didn't like that because then people would forget. And I felt like I had like kind of photographic memory when it came to like those things. Like I knew exactly what happened on every round and I could remember it like clear as day, like why we lost the round. And then when someone's memory didn't align with mine, it would be super annoying. So I liked doing it in the moment at the time. These days, with all the tools you have to go over stuff, I don't think that's optimal. But I learned to communicate differently with different players on the team also around that time. So the team without Skadoodle and Freakazoid, I was communicating the same way to everyone probably. But like moving forward with Skadoodle and Shroud and, you know, like Freakazoid, I learned like, hey, like I can yell at like nothing in Freakazoid and tell them things that need to be done. We can get pretty fiery. And then the next round we can forget it. Like they have that personality where they understand. But if I do that to like Shroud and Skadoodle, they'll like shut down.
Right.
And that
so is, different people need a different communication style, right?
Yeah. So like I learned a lot about communicating in like those middle years. And I'm not gonna lie, like I was definitely pretty fiery, like as an game leader. Like people that know me outside of the game wouldn't expect it.
Yes.
But the people that played with me know that I was like willing to get pretty fucking fiery.
To paraphrase the legendary DMX, I just love when y'all in my Patreon crew give me a bigger piece of cake to chew a hole through. Because obviously, one of the ways I'm able to support myself and make content like I do on this channel is thanks to my Patreon community and the likes of Ahmed Haju, Frisky, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Animosity, Jensen Gore, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and always, always a special thanks goes out to my main man, Jerky's Minion. Do you want to ask a question in my video AMA? Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest to interview? Maybe you want teasers, find out who I've already interviewed in upcoming episodes. Or do you want to take part in one of those lengthy online discussions that I do with my top patrons? Well, if any of these perks or more appeal to you, then put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today via the Patreon link below.